always, when I give a talk, have to start out thinking about which hat I'm wearing, because I wear a lot of different hats. I work half-time at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, or NCSA, and half-time in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. And I'm also the director of the co-director of the Waters Network and principal investigator. So I'll tell you, my disclaimer up front is that I'm wearing my NCSA hat today when we're talking about cyber infrastructure, but I will give you some background on what the Waters Network is all about as well. So some background on cyber infrastructure from the NCSA perspective. The Office of Cyber Infrastructure is funding both NCSA and SDSC, the San Diego Supercomputing Center, to work with leading edge communities to develop cyber infrastructure to support science and engineering nationwide, all disciplines, and to incorporate successful prototypes into a persistent infrastructure. As part of that effort, I got involved with NCSA as a faculty member in environmental engineering, got involved in some of these environmental observatory development efforts, and wound up getting funded to run the CLEANER Project Office. And CLEANER has a long acronym that I won't get into because CLEANER is actually going away. CLEANER is working with QASI, so CLEANER represents the environmental engineers. QASI represents the hydrologists. We're now working together to plan a single environmental observatory network called the WATERS Network. And WATERS stands for Water and Environmental Research Systems Network. And WATERS is one of three NSF-sponsored environmental observatories that have been proposed. Some of you might be familiar with NEON, which is an ecological observatory that's been proposed, or OOI, which is an oceans observing initiative. Those are the other two which we're working with in terms of cyber infrastructure to try and make sure that everything works across those three observatories. But we're in the, as these observatories are getting defined, trying to figure out exactly how to do that. The co-directors for our project office are myself, Jerry Schnorr of the University of Iowa, and Chuck Haas from Drexel University. And to support the planning process for the Waters Network, which is going on over the next couple of years, NCSA has an Environmental Cyber Infrastructure Demonstrator, or ECID, project as a part of our effort funded by the Office of Cyber Infrastructure to focus on what kinds of cyber infrastructure the Waters community needs and create prototype cyber infrastructure so they can get a better understanding of what might be possible. So that's what I'm going to show you, some of that work today. All of that's been driven by requirements gathering and close community collaborations. But before I get into that, let me give you a little bit more background on the Waters Network. Here's that acronym that I mentioned very briefly before, how it's a joint collaboration. This is actually being sponsored by two different directorates within NSF, the Engineering and the Geoscience Directorates. And we're having a workshop in a couple of weeks to explore perhaps whether the Social Science Directorate might get involved as well. So trying to plan the scale of an effort with multiple directors is quite a challenge. These are the acronyms for CLEANER and QASI if you're interested. So this network would be funded under the MREFC program at NSF, which stands for Major Research Equipment and Facilities Construction. And our target construction date is 2011, and then the operation date when we would start operating would be 2015. So that sounds pretty far away, but when these things have to go into the presidential budget, it takes quite a lead time to get them into the presidential budget, and then the national community planning effort that goes into getting approval to go into the budget takes quite a long time. So we're in the midst of that planning process right now. We have some draft vision statements, which I'll show you briefly here, which are literally only a couple months old and may yet change. But our draft vision is that the Waters Network will transform our understanding of the Earth's water and related biogeochemical cycles, things like nitrate and carbon cycles, across multiple spatial and temporal scales. And this is really important, is the spatial and temporal aspect of this, and the challenges of looking at multiple scales to enable forecasting and management of critical water processes affected by human activities. And this part is a very important part of the waters network. We're interested in areas that are affected by human activities. We're not looking so much at pristine natural areas, except when they serve as, say, source waters for the drinking water, then we may need to consider them. These are our grand challenges, also draft, to detect the interactions of human activities and natural perturbations, things that happen naturally, with the quantity, distribution, and quality of water in real time. So water is our focus, but we look at the whole water cycle, which means air comes into it as well, because of course through precipitation, that becomes important to water also. This in real time is also an important component, which I'll come back to when we talk about cyber infrastructure. The second grand challenge is to predict the patterns and variability of processes affecting the quantity and quality of water at scales from local all the way to continental. We want to be able to predict what happens to water all the way to the continental scale, and that's a huge challenge. And then to achieve optimal management of water resources through the use of institutional and economic instruments. So we're looking at the human and the social science aspects of water management, as well as the, what you might call, the hard science. This is the concept of the waters network. We'll have observatories, which are fairly large-scale facilities. Within those are environmental field facilities, which are more local areas that would have intensive sensing going on. And then informatics and cyber infrastructure, pulling that data in and dishing it out to the community across the country. A lot of interest in modeling and synthesis. And then a sensors and measurement facility with a feedback loop here that's very important to feedback so that we can have adaptive observation as we see what our data is showing to be able to hone in on where are the greatest areas of uncertainty, what's going on, is there something interesting happening? If so, I want to crank up my observations. The network design principles, we have a team that's been working hard for the last few months. Tom Harmon, can you wave your hand there? Tom spoke yesterday. He's on our network design team, looking at how we should design this thing in a place-independent way right now, and then we'll focus on specific locations once those are chosen in about a year and a half or so. We want to enable multi-scale, dynamic, predictive modeling for water, sediment, and water quality. And that's fluxes, flow paths, and rates. Rates are reaction rates, which can be chemical or biological. Flow paths would be where's the water going, and then fluxes would be how much water is coming across any particular cross-section. To do that, we want to have near real-time assimilation of the data into models and feedback, as I said, for observatory design. So we can look at, say, what happens during a storm, because so much of the movement of sediments and water happens during storms or short-term events like that. And then being able to do point to national scale prediction is the ultimate goal, although, of course, the research problem there is to figure out how to do that effectively. The network will provide the data set and the framework to be able to test the sufficiency of the data, where do we need more data, and to look at alternative model conceptualization so that we can do that in a very rigorous way. We came up with a list of master design variables that are given here, and scale is one of the most important, so I'll talk about that a little bit more. Where appropriate, which is more in the humid regions probably than in the arid regions, although we've got some subgroups looking at that question, over ranges of scales. Point, plot, subcatchment, catchment, watershed, basin, and continental, the whole different scales. The EFFs that I mentioned, the environmental field facilities, will typically be designed at the catchment to watershed scale, which is on the order of, you know, tens to thousands of square kilometers, probably on the smaller end for most of these facilities. That's where the intensive sensing will be going on. But the observatories themselves are going to be designed at the basin scale. So the basin is basically the area where the water is captured and it all flows out into common location. Basins can vary in size tremendously. The largest basin where we have some serious problems would be the Mississippi River Basin, which covers about a third of the United States. But within that basin, there's smaller basins as well. So looking at how you nest one within another is an important issue here. This is an example of what one of these observatories might look like. You can see we're looking at all the different facilities that handle water, from reservoirs to agricultural fields to urban runoff. And this is a confined animal feeding operation, which would have the agricultural fields as well, would have big effects on contaminants that might get into our water supply. And then looking at evaporation and the whole water cycle here, we've got wastewater and drinking water issues, needing to put sensors in some of the treatment facilities that treat water as well. So that's a brief run through what the Waters Network is all about. Now I'm going to come back to the cyber infrastructure issues to support this kind of national observing system. We've been focused on gathering the requirements for the cyber infrastructure at a fairly high level right now through interviews at conferences and meetings and a community survey. Tom Finholt, who's at the University of Michigan, some of you might be familiar with him, he's been leading that requirements gathering effort. And then at NCSA, Tim Wentling has been leading some usability studies with some of the early cyber infrastructure prototypes as well. This community survey, we surveyed two professional organizations that are fairly representative of the environmental engineering and hydrology communities that we're designing the network for. And the key findings out of that survey are driving the ESID project that I mentioned, which is doing some cyber environment, or which I haven't defined that yet, but I will in a moment, the cyber infrastructure prototypes, essentially. So here's just a sample of some of the findings from that survey that are driving our cyber infrastructure development. This first one is, what are the single most important obstacles to using data from different sources? This is very important to us to be able to bring in data that's been collected by mission agencies like USGS, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Energy collects some. There's all these different agencies going out there and collecting data, and we want to be able to bring it all together, as well as our own sensors that will be installed, because we don't want to repeat what they're already collecting. We want to take advantage of all the data that's already out there and then add to it. So some of those issues, number one in the survey was learning how to quality control the data, understanding how good was that data, and dealing with non-standard data formats was a second issue. And then 55% of the respondents were also concerned about, when they share their own data, are they going to get enough credit when they do that? This was an interesting finding about what software packages do you use most frequently in your work in terms of looking at data analysis. And the majority of both communities are using Excel spreadsheets. And then some other packages as well, but ArcGIS and MATLAB are the two that follow behind Excel. So this community is not using high-end computational tools. They're comfortable with spreadsheets, and that's what we have to work with to start from. That's not to say all of them are, but the majority. What's important to them in terms of technology adoption, the clarity of the interface and ease of use, that's why spreadsheets are so widely used, and ability to do things that I can't do with current software or hardware. So in order to adopt a new tool, they want it to be easy to use, to have good support, and to have new capabilities that they can't do now with their existing software. And then lastly, talking about what makes you want to collaborate with another person. Here, people are interested in collaborating with people in complementary areas of interest, meaning not the same area of expertise that I have, but someone that's complementary to that in terms of what I'm trying to accomplish. So we need to be able to help them to find people who are different from themselves. And that's a challenge in terms of figuring out how to do that effectively. So looking at that survey and the interviews, what are some of the cyber infrastructure challenges that have come out of this planning effort to date? Clearly, the first requirement for observatory cyber infrastructure is that the community has to gain access to the data. But if you just deliver the data through a web portal and say, I'm done, that's not going to be enough. It's not going to allow us to have our observatory reach its full potential and meet all the community's requirements. So what would help that? First of all, people need to understand the data quality and get credit for their data sharing. And to do that, we need an integrated provenance system. So what's provenance? Provenance essentially tells you where did that data come from and what's happened to it since it was collected. And an integrated provenance system will essentially allow you to track what's been done with the data in an automated way, ideally. So this data was downloaded by this group, and here's the publications that they created from it. If you saw that, and you saw that that was a group that you trust, and they've already worked with that data, you'd probably feel pretty good about using the data. So that's the kind of information that we're trying to set up. Another issue is enabling users who don't have strong computational skills. The core of our field does not have strong computational skills to work with the flood of environmental data that's coming at them. People who've never done modeling, never been computational junkies, are suddenly having to figure out how to handle all this data that's going to come at them. So we need easy-to-use tools for manipulating large data sets, analyzing them, and assimilating them into models. We need workflow integrators. If you're familiar with the term workflow, a workflow tool essentially, a workflow is a series of steps that you're doing of analyses. So I get my data, I do some conversions to it, I feed it into a model, I get a prediction, I do a visualization, that's a workflow. A workflow integrator would allow users to take whatever tools they're comfortable with, even Excel spreadsheets, do the manipulations, but then integrate it together with real-time streaming environmental data. And I'll show you an example of this. And then another challenge is that the vast community of users of these observatories and the resources they generate will create this huge volume of information out there. Once we've got this thing in place, we're going to desperately need knowledge networking tools to help the community effectively find collaborators that they might want to work with, data sets, workflows, publications, and be able to find the right information. And we're already running into that issue today, but it's going to be even worse once we get this whole network online. So to address these requirements, what we've been developing at NCSA are cyber environments to help people integrate all that. So what exactly is a cyber environment? Let's start by taking a look at the research process. So we've got, when you start, you're creating some hypotheses. You're obtaining the data if you're doing data-driven research, which is what we'd be doing in these observatories. Then analyzing the data and assimilating it into models if you're using models. And then linking and running those analyses and the models together if you're using more than one tool. And then discussing the results and ultimately publishing them. So we look at cyber infrastructure as a series of services that support each of those steps in the research process. And when you're talking about creating hypotheses, that's where you need these knowledge services to help you find what's out there, who's done what. What do I need to consider as I'm thinking about what I want to do in my own research? Data services will help you to bring that data in and do the conversions that you need to, feed it into your workflows for whatever analyses you want to do, which could be modeling or statistical analyses. And what we call meta workflows are where we're tying together different tools and models and running them. And then discussing the results is where we need collaboration services to help people work together who are in different locations, which is another important component of these observatories. And then the digital library would be where the publications would go. So our project in ESID is focusing primarily on these three aspects of the services, but tying it together with these two We're working with the Quasi Hydrologic Information System project, which is led by David Maidman at the University of Texas at Austin, so that we can integrate the whole thing in a cyber environment. So what's a cyber environment? Cyber environment couples a traditional desktop computing environment with the resources and capabilities of a national cyber infrastructure, so that you can work on your desktop that's integrated with the high-performance computing and other data resources that you need. It will provide an unprecedented ability to access, integrate, automate, and manage complex collaborative projects across disciplinary and geographical boundaries, which is exactly what we need for our observatory. And the ESID project is demonstrating how cyber environments can support observatory sensor and event management, the workflow and scientific analyses, and the knowledge networking. So we're focusing more on what do you do once you already have the data in terms of what kind of cyber infrastructure support you need, as opposed to closer to the sensor gathering itself. But we're collaborating with people who are doing that part so that we can do a whole end-to-end demonstration. And then providing collaborative environments where people of all different flavors, the scientists as well as the educators and the practitioners, as we start looking at outreach, can acquire, share, and discuss data and information. We're looking at a flexible, service-oriented architecture in the prototypes we're doing so that we can pop different components in and out. If you want to work with different tools, we should be able to do that. So here are the components of the ESID cyber environment. We've got a portal system, which is the cyber collaboratory. We have a knowledge network tool called CINOW, which is essentially a recommendation tool. It builds, uses social networking algorithms to build a model of what resources are out there and provide referrals to you based on the activities that you've been doing. Cyber Integrator is a workflow integration tool, which I'll tell you more about. Then we have data services, which are web services that go out to the databases and grab the data that you need when you want to start working. There's a metadata service built on Tupelo that operates behind the scenes to keep track of what everybody's doing as they're working with these tools so that we can provide that provenance record of what's been done with the data. And then a community event management and processing tool, which will provide another link. These are the back-end tools to call different tools when you need them when an event happens. Something interesting is happening out there in the environment. I want to trigger a model run automatically, for example. And then single sign-on security is coming to allow you to sign on once and be able to use all these tools in an integrated way. So the Cyber Integrator tool that I mentioned allows us to couple different analyses and models to do real-time automated updating of those models when we've got different tools that they work with. It's a prototype workflow executor technology, and right now we started out with Excel because that's where our community is working. We've got IM2Learn as an image processing and mining tool, and we've got some data mining tools that have been developed at NCSA, so we've tied those in, and then Java codes, including the event management tools. We're working on MATLAB and Fortran. We'll be plugged into this soon. And then there'll be additional tools added as we've got some beta users starting to use the system. This is how the architecture of the Cyber Integrator works. You've got an editor that the user works with, and then an engine that essentially calls these different tools. So here's Excel, here's Image2Learn. There's a tools registry and a data registry that tells it what tools are available so that you can offer those to the user, and then they're hooked together and the data passes from one application to the other behind the scenes so that the user doesn't have to deal with any of that. The use case that we started working with for this was a group in Texas who were looking at fecal coliform prediction in ArcGIS. They actually wound up rewriting their model in Excel to perform some Monte Carlo simulation because ArcGIS couldn't do that. And what we wanted to do was to show how we could tie together these different tools to reduce their manual labor in linking the tools together. And this is how it works. Here's Cyber Integrator. You have the Excel executor, which goes out, calls a spreadsheet that gets stream flows from the USGS. Stream flows would be how much water is flowing in the streams out there in the environment in real time. So those are web services that go out, calculate probability distributions, which are then fed into a second spreadsheet, which has the Monte Carlo simulation, another Excel spreadsheet. The results of that then go over here to this other tool, Image to Learn, which loads shape files from ArcGIS and overlays them with the Excel spreadsheet results and geo-references them and produces a visualization that's more sophisticated than you would be able to do just using Excel alone. So we've linked together multiple tools, enabled our researchers to still be able to use the Excel that they're comfortable with, but tie it in with a real-time data flow from the USGS, as well as some more sophisticated visualization tools in an easy-to-use way. So the scenario we're looking at for starting to test some of these tools, we started out with a sensor anomaly detection scenario. In the portal that I mentioned, the users can subscribe to an anomaly detector workflow that says, I want to be alerted anytime it looks like there might be a problem in this data. Once they've subscribed, then the sensor data, this is our sensors that we're working with out in Corpus Christi Bay in Texas, that data flows in to an anomaly detector, which will provide an alert to a dashboard that sits on your desktop, and can also, in your little system tray, if you're working in Windows, come up with an announcement to tell you that there's an anomaly that you should be concerned about potentially in your data. So this is that event trigger mechanism that I told you about and why you want to have these different tools integrated together in a cyber environment. That can then, you can go into the portal to view your data and try to understand what's happening with those sensors, check out some nearby sensors and see whether it looks like there might be a problem or not. And then this is the knowledge networking tool, which provides a referral. In this case, in this particular scenario, we've assumed there's a problem with the anomaly detector workflow. And in fact, it's pinging you when there isn't a problem. And this tool provided a way to refer to someone else's sensor anomaly detector workflow at another observatory that you can plug in and get running on your data very easily. And you get the referral through this knowledge networking tool. And then that goes over to Cyber Integrator, which loads that workflow that came from somebody else. You can then adjust the parameters so that it runs on your data, and then get it running in your event manager so that it'll keep tracking your data as it continues to flow in real time. So that's that particular scenario. What is happening behind the scenes to enable all that? A lot of it is the Java messaging service that's passing messages back and forth from one tool to another. And then some of this is URLs being passed back and forth. There's some SOAP web services happening. And the data and metadata operating behind the scenes that gives provenance so that when you get a referral to the sensor anomaly workflow created by somebody else, it knows where to go and find it and pull it up for you because that person published it. Then we're doing some work with Corpus Christi Bay to look at what are some of the issues in trying to implement this at an actual observatory. And the goal of the testbed is to integrate our technology with the hydrologic information system technology to create an end-to-end environmental information system from the sensor all the way to the analysis. And we're using, in this case, they want to study hypoxia, which is the absence of oxygen. And they want to get an alert about 24 hours ahead that we think there's going to be hypoxia tomorrow, so let's get our field crews out there so that they can do some more detailed manual sampling. So we want the real-time data stream and analysis providing that kind of an alert. These are all the different sensors that are out there. You can see they're collected by all different groups, and that's some of the issues. But if we start to look at what's this environmental information system going to look like, there's a work group server. This is the HIS technology with web services feeding into the same workflow execution, but now we've got a hypoxia predictor and we get a forecast here coming out of Cyber Integrator. In this case, same dashboard alert, but in this case now I'm gonna contact my collaborators and say, hey, it's time to go, let's take a look at these results and decide what to do. This is what those will feed into those predictions and the visualizations of both the hydrodynamics and the hypoxia risk. The thing to point out here is that these are C codes and Fortran numerical models and some data mining algorithms all are going to get tied together in Cyber Integrator to bring these together. What are the cyber infrastructure challenges here? One is automating the QA/QC of the data as it's coming in. If you want to use it right away, you've got to do some automation. David, can you wave your hand here? This is David Hill, who's my PhD student, and he's creating sensor anomaly detectors using statistical models. And I didn't talk about this because the workshop organizers wanted me to focus on the cyber infrastructure, and that's a whole nother talk. But these are some of the methods that he's using: dynamic Bayesian networks and artificial neural networks clustering and perceptrons. And if you're interested in knowing more about that work, you can talk to David. He's going to be here all week. One of the issues is the statistical models are pretty good at identifying the anomalies. In this case, our data, we don't know what kind of anomalies we might run into, so we wind up having to come up with prediction limits based on the historical data, and that's all we have to go on. It's not like some of these cleaner processes when you're looking at environmental data. Sometimes, though, it's difficult to differentiate a sensor error from something that really is a real unusual environmental phenomenon, and that's the big challenge here. And then getting access to the data is another big issue because it's collected by different people and stored in different formats. Integrating that data into diverse models, doing calibration, as well as near real-time updating and coming up with automated approaches. Lots of challenges there. And then also model integration when you've got multiple models. We've got to transform the data. So to conclude, it's cyber infrastructure for environmental data is challenging, but the benefits to our community in enabling larger scale, near real-time research are tremendous, and that's why we're trying to build this observatory network to support this. Our cyber environment demonstrates the benefits of end-to-end integration of the cyber infrastructure, not just having separate tools, but getting them all to work together. And this will create a powerful system for linking the observatory operations with the investigator-driven research in a flexible way so that we have a national community working together. And I'll stop there.